everybody, and welcome to the Enterprise Sales Development Podcast, brought to you by Cyence Technologies. We interview outbound leaders at fast growth businesses to learn their secrets and bring you actionable insights. Thanks for joining us this week.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Enterprise Sales Development. I'm your host, Eric Quantrum, the CMO at Cyence. Today's episode is full of wisdom. And oftentimes sales wisdom comes on the back of lived experience and number of years applying the craft. And boy, oh boy, do we have that in spades with our guest today, Kevin Gaither. Kevin has quite an illustrious resume. The numbers that stick out, 8 startups, 3 successful exits, and they include really familiar names like Betterworks, ZipRecruiter, Upkeep, where he was the sales leader, SVP of sales, chief of sales. He's actually been consulting over the last few years, 17 different named clients, ton of like movers and shakers in the space. This is a guy who knows his stuff. But that brings up another point and one that I think is really relevant to this interview. It's actually where we started. One of the points that he so humbly made in the interview is that Kevin's been around long enough to make a lot of mistakes and learn from them and not repeat them. So one of the key reasons to listen for it, Kevin gives his top 3, which expands to a 3.5 and then 4, of top mistakes he's made over his career, what he learned from them, what you can do to avoid the same mistakes in your organization. Boy, oh boy, great tips, great insights. In fact, you'll just find Kevin to be like a super informative speaker, very relatable, former podcast host himself. So he's done this a time or two and has the chops, if you will. But I love this interview. I found myself agreeing with points that Kevin was making right, left, and center. And I think you will too. So without further ado, enough of me babbling about Kevin's illustrious resume. Let's get to it. Here is KG Kevin Gaither. And we're back with Kevin Gaither. Kevin, KG, so great to have you on.
Thanks for having me. Fun times ahead.
You know, one of the things that on the Enterprise Sales Development Podcast that we love to do is get people with a real rich plethora of experience. I mean, you've been in the sales game now for almost 3 decades, which I think qualifies you as having a multitude of varied experiences.
Yeah, there's no question. And of course, Eric, there's a difference between experience and expertise too, right?
There definitely is. And one of the things that we were talking about kind of like off camera was really around some of the mistakes that happen in sales departments, whether they be inside sales, sales development teams, or a greater, you know, kind of sales development organizations, sales organizations overall. Sure. And you made the point that, you know, hey, I've made every mistake in the book. Which I actually think of as a badge of honor and something to be extraordinarily proud of, especially in the tech sales space. I'm guessing you agree.
Oh yeah, 1,000%. And this comes, thankfully I've been blessed working for founders and with founders and CEOs of these, you know, high growth startups that believed in, you know, run fast and break things, and all those mantras that, you know, here's another one that's really popular. We never lose. We either win or we learn. You know, we're working with a slew of founders and CEOs and CROs prior to my ascension, you know, that believed in that type of stuff was unbelievably beneficial to be able to go, okay, let's try something new. And if you made a mistake, that didn't mean you're ahead. That didn't mean you're done. You screwed up. You made a mistake. Now, if there was ill intent, you know, Eric, like if there was ill intent, well, yeah, okay, that's something completely, you know, completely different. But making mistakes, great. We just learned another way not to do something. And that's been a badge of honor, as you say, throughout my entire career.
Well, as someone who kind of introduced inside sales into, I think, a number of companies, but probably most notably, you had roles and even kind of followed on with being head of the AAISP chapters in Southern California. And I'd love to understand and kind of maybe even ask for some of your top 3 mistakes in sales development. If you were to kind of like stack rank, and I think there's a lot of listeners out there that could probably also benefit from, you know, the learnings.
Yeah. Yeah, I've made them all. So I've built five SDR teams in my entire, you know, career, all from scratch, and made a ton of mistakes. And I'll never forget one of the first mistakes that I made. And this was me being a little bit of an inexperienced sales leader, not managing up to the CEO properly, who did not understand sales per se, and certainly not lead generation or SDR work.
Technical leader by chance?
This one was a technical leader. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Super bright guy, coded like it was, you know, amazing. Very successful previously, but not a sales leader per se, or understanding that mechanism. And when we build our sales, I'm going to get to my point here. When we build our sales compensation plans, everybody on the planet says, well, you got to make sure that your sales compensation plan, you know, rolls up to, you know, the leadership goals and the company goals, you know, make sure that there's alignment in their goals and the compensation plan. Here's the mistake I made with the SDR team. I paid them based on revenues. Mm. Now, there's many, in fact, I think HubSpot actually still pays their SDRs based on revenues. I could be wrong. That may have changed. And this is not like, you know, word of God type of stuff, Eric, like, yeah, you know, Moses came down and here's the 10 commandments. I'm telling you, there was a mistake in my situation because my SDRs didn't have control over what happened after they handed over the qualified opportunity. And right, we had problems enough as it was at this particular startup where I was building SDRs in generating revenues as a whole. You know, it was like a round, you know, company. So that is what I consider to be mistake number one, paying your, and I was solely, it was 100% payment on revenues. It wasn't some sort of, you know, blend.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And that probably also created a bunch of problems too with downstream kind of like attribution and a lot of motivational issues for SDRs, especially waiting for deals to close before they see any kind of payouts whatsoever.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and there was this ongoing payment that it was like a recurring revenue stream, and they were going to get paid when we got paid, and we didn't. Yeah, anyway, it was, that is a definitive mistake. Now, if a portion of the SDR compensation is somehow tied to revenue, I don't think that's awful, but I don't like anything where the SDR, it's not in the SDR's control, you know, right. And that's where I'd want. So my mistake was paying them based on revenue. Go ahead. Was there a follow-on question? Because there's two more stories.
Knock them out.
All right. This is going to be like super trite, and many people have done this. It was the focus just on the dials, And of course, that's a, you know, 100%, you know, everybody goes, oh yeah, you know, dials don't matter. That's not what I'm saying. Okay. So just focusing on the dials is a mistake. And that's the just piece is the asterisk, you know, or not the asterisk, but the italicized piece to this, of course. And instead, the learning lesson, this was, it was like my second SDR team that I built. I realized that where it's at is conversion rates from the dials to the conversations. And one of my favorite charts. So we had the dashboard, and in the upper left-hand corner of, you know, the dashboard with like the 9 chicklets of, you know, and components. It, of course, originally was, here's the calls the salespeople have made for the day. Yep. And I replaced that when I started realizing that we weren't getting what we wanted out of this. We replaced that with simply a stack ranking of conversion rates. So imagine in your mind's eye, a bar chart where on the left-hand side of the column, you've got the highest percentage connect rate with your target. And now you've got the salespeople's names at the very bottom of the chart. So now instead of a stack ranking of quantities of calls that they're making, the number one dashboard component was the conversion rate, which helped deliver the message to the SDRs. I don't give a rat's behind if you make 40, 50, or 150 dials, it's that conversion rate to conversations. And this, and again, I just want to emphasize, please, if you say dials don't matter, you're missing the point, because you have to have some inputs, okay? And KD, Kevin Dorsey, I think he does a very good job of saying you have to have both.
Yep.
You have to have both. You can't just have SDRs making 10 calls a day. And I mean, if you had 10 calls a day, you'd better have a very high conversion rate.
Right.
And that in the, this day and age. And by the way, I should say calls or outbound activity really is sort of the, you know, there.
The other mistake, never get you home though.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. And the other mistake that I made was having marketing run the SDR team. And this is, I feel like this is a personal mistake. And I've seen a ton of research out there that suggests, recent research from the Bridge Group in Boston, that something like 20 to 30% of SDR teams roll up to marketing teams.
Yeah.
That doesn't make it right, in my opinion. Okay, dude. Like, that doesn't necessarily make it right. And if we just go back to the alignment, that's what we need to have happen. And so the learning lesson there is I had this SDR team rolling up to marketing, and it was just like another set of marketing. And make no mistake about it, by the way, an SDR team is a marketing function. I measured cost per qualified opportunity, which every sales leader, you know, okay, great, pull it out of marketing, but you still had better measure those types of costs for your team to help determine whether or not this SDR team is, you know, accretive to the business or not. You know, in other words, your cost per qualified opportunities that they generate, you know, it better be in line with your economics there. But the mistake was having the marketing team run it, and then it became, oh, we sent you those opportunities, and it was this, that, you know, that same marketing and sales animosity thing that would happen, where it's like, no, we sent you the stuff, you know, we sent you stuff, and the salespeople going, yeah, but what you sent us was crap, and so bringing it back under sales leadership, but making sure that sales leader understands that this is a marketing function, and there are specific goals that have to line up to your revenue goals. Those conversion rates from, you know, conversation to meeting set and meeting held to qualified opportunity, all those things need to flow. I'm going to give you another bonus one, by the way. Sure. This is going to be like, you know, 3.5. If anybody tries to tell me that you can't have more SDRs per AE, because oftentimes they say, oh, it's, you know, it's one SDR for four AEs or two AEs or four AEs or something like that. It can go the other way.
Yeah.
As long as your economics are there, as long as your CAC ratios are still in line, you can have four SDRs, three SDRs per AE. If you have high ticket, long sales cycle, super sticky, high LTV types of deals. So there's your, you know, three point. So living off of the rule of thumb, I guess, would be the mistake rule, you know, mistake number five. Oh, well, you can't have more SDRs per AE than one. that's stupid.
Well, and you know, what's interesting about thumbs and rules of them is they apply to businesses that might not be yours. And so, you know, each circumstance is different. And I think that's a really insightful one that people don't oftentimes think about. We actually had Matt Pertuzzi as a past guest. Highly recommend that podcast, because he did walk through kind of, Bridge Group has been running a seminal sales development survey for the last decade and a half plus.
That's right.
And you know, it's a great way to benchmark your results, but it's also a great way to take a quick step back and say, what can I take from this survey and do similarly or kind of expect in my own group? And what makes my business completely different from those surveyed for success?
Yeah, that's exactly right. But and to be clear though, and I, you know, I'm just going to create a little tension here. Don't go into these reports though. So I agree with what you're saying, but don't go into these reports looking for what you want to hear. And then right. If you don't see it, go, well, that doesn't apply to me. You know, you still have to have some, you know, some objectivity to that. The most recent, it was either the AE report that the Bridge Group did or the SDR report. I think it was the AE report that they did. One of the things that I loved the most that I share with my clients, Eric, is that, and this could fall into, you know, another mistake, which is, you know, AEs are, should still be self-sourcing. Yeah. Now, as you know, you have high trend, and they do a very good job of separating it out into like low ACV to high ACV types of sales. And there's like four different levels to it. At every single level, AEs are self-prospecting. Okay. At every level. Now, granted, if it's high transaction volume and, you know, low ACV, there's less percentage of the time that the AE is doing self-sourcing. And when it gets up into the high ACV deals, there's more AE self-sourcing.
Yeah.
And I think that that is another, you know, mistake, which is AE should just be sitting around with, you know, having demos and qualified meetings put onto their calendars. That's just not true. The data doesn't suggest that.
Right.
That's really the answer to that question, which you didn't even ask. You didn't even ask the question. I gave it to you anyway.
I love it. Bonus material definitely applies. And you know, what's interesting, a lot of the thread of continuity that each one of these kind of like mistake areas and potential correction fixes for all of those listening, to me suggests having kind of a structure that supports the overall goals of the organization, as opposed to disjointed parts, kind of like working ad hoc,
yes,
like out in the wild, right, where misalignment can and often does occur.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Look, you know, I don't know when this pod's gonna, you know, drop, but we're recording in August. Okay, if I don't care what size company you're at, this would be the time when you should start thinking about your 2024 revenue goals and how you're going to architect those goals. And as a result, your revenue, you know, architecture, your revenue architecture, which, you know, blossoms up through conversion rates into your qualified opportunities and the meetings that result in that, you know, this funnel, of course. Mm-hmm. Eric, you know, funnels. Oh, yeah. It's not one funnel. It's okay. Not one funnel. And so I oftentimes see leaders, they want to have like one spreadsheet or one tab, and that's just not true. You know, you've got to be looking at, you know, the sources of your revenues from inbound marketing, outbound SDRs, AE self-sourcing, channel sales and channel partnerships and referrals. And then once you can then say, great, I'm going to break my revenues up into those four channels. Well, now I've got four tabs of my spreadsheet that each have, you know, different supporting mechanisms that go into that. And there's different strategies and structures and headcount and all those things that go into each one of those, as opposed to what oftentimes happens is, here's our revenue goals, go. And you're not so clear exactly where that revenue is going to come from, or those qualified opportunities are going to, you know, come from.
Well, you know, you're really hitting on a point that we see all the time here in the day-to-day business of science, which is if you start trying to teach treat outbound deals similarly to inbound or channel, oh boy, good luck, because you've already just messed it up from the start. From the prospect's or the buyer's point of view.
Oh yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, I've made a fortune off of inbound at ZipRecruiter, because we had such a massive megaphone, you know, tons and tons of marketing on podcasts and you know, email and direct mail and all this kind of stuff there. But there definitely is a difference between going outbound and reaching people that didn't hear from you, they didn't know about you, they didn't want your call, versus people that are like, oh yeah, I heard your ad on Stern last week. You right. know,
yeah.
there's just a total difference between those types of people. And I would also go so far as to say, people always forget this, just because it's inbound doesn't mean it's automatically qualified. I'm going to box the ears of the next CMO that goes, hey, all these inbounds, you know, and calling them MQLs right out of the gate. They're not they're not automatically MQLs just because they came inbound, to you. There's still a level of qualification. And in fact, I actually prefer that my inbound SDRs have a little bit of skepticism associated with it, because it's like, well, you're going to buy a $50,000, $20,000 product from me. Maybe this is too good to be true. Like, you just came inbound. Like, who are you? You know, you need to have a little bit of skepticism and definitely qualify.
Yeah. And done in the most polite, respectful, responsive manner possible. I think I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, we could probably do another podcast and spend at least a few hours talking about inbound qualification criteria and ways to do it best. That said, the difference, I'd love to kind of peel this onion a little bit, because of someone with as much experience as you've had in as many different businesses or looking at different business models, at that kind of like overall holistic difference between, say, let's just take the split of inbound versus outbound. Oftentimes it comes back to the way the brain works and awareness and cognitive psychology. But when we go outbound, isn't that the most true form of, for lack of a better word, I'm actually going to use the word meritocracy, where a vendor, solutions provider, you know, in our case, client business, is essentially opening up their case to somebody who can and should be able to evaluate it in a sales cycle.
That meritocracy, I love it. I mean, there is no truer, you know, way to then determine, like, hey, I didn't want you to call. I didn't ask you to call.
Exactly.
But then I end up taking a meeting and then ultimately buying from you. I mean, but that's why the percentage conversion rates are so darn low. It's single digit, 1% conversion rates from, you know, an outbound to close or something like that, or worse. Mm-hmm. But absolutely. It is a pure meritocracy. And of course, your SDRs that are doing outbound should be getting paid more than the SDRs that are qualifying inbound.
That's right.
There's a level of difficulty. It's like the high dive. There's a level of difficulty associated with that, for sure. Yeah, great. I love that meritocracy. I never even thought about it, you know, including that into the vernacular.
Well, the reason why I kind of champion that idea or that thesis is also because I think that it aligns goals in a way that no assumptions can be made, especially when you think about outbound success being the ability to get to yes. And that ability to get to yes on, yeah, I want to have a next conversation. Yeah. Okay. Tuesday at 10 a.m. works well for me. Yeah. I'll check you guys out. Yeah. This seems interesting to me. You know, oftentimes that's all you get from buyers, right? Like, it's not I've been waiting for your call since the beginning of the quarter, and thank goodness you're around now. No, it's literally just like, I was closed and now I'm open. And that shift is actually monumental for outbound SDRs to achieve.
Yeah, man. Yeah, we could have about, you know, 3-4 more hours of podcasts. I have some real concerns about the future of SDRs, mainly because an observation that I'm seeing with SDR teams of clients of mine is that there's this, like, and I don't know where it's coming from, and maybe it's just my clients, so I hate to make big, broad statements like this because it's like dangerous. But I see that the curiosity levels of SDRs in the business these days is very low. We put them through training, we give them scripts and playbooks, which is what they should get. But I am concerned that the spoon feeding of some of these SDR teams does not encourage them to be truly curious. They're good at following the instructions, but being truly curious about somebody's business and then being able to, like, ask other insightful questions to get the prospect. Like you said, I went from closed to being open. How do you go from being closed to open? There's something insightful that you said that relates to me. Well, if you don't ask insightful questions, if you're just reading down the damn script, EQ, like, if you're just reading down the damn script and you're not, like, peeling that, the layers of the onion back to, like, go, well, wait a minute, I heard you say this. What does that actually mean? And then, like, what does it mean for the company? And what does it mean for your team? And then what does it mean for you personally? These SDRs that I've observed, again, I'm just my own observations, they're not as curious these days as they should be to be able to take these prospects from being closed to being open.
Now, I happen to 100% agree with you, and I've noticed the same sort of phenomenon. I think it would be useful for especially our listening audience to say, okay, so if you agree, if the people listening to this say, yeah, I've noticed the same thing, less curiosity, how do we solve for that?
It's coaching. The answer to that is coaching. Okay. I don't care what tool you use. If you're not, and I actually have a free guide on my website, insidesalesexperts.com, that is the model week for successful sales managers. Okay. In other words, if you don't download it, you're not a successful sales manager. I'm just kidding.
But not really.
But there should be an hour a day. If you're a frontline manager, I don't know what you're doing if you're not reviewing calls an hour a day. Now, that's just reviewing calls. Then it's the coaching sessions themselves with your SDRs. And then there's pipeline calls. Pipeline calls will be like something completely different, like where you're like, let's talk about the quality of the, you know, the deals that you're working on and the prospects that you're having conversations with. But I'm talking about like real coaching, real situations. And this is where the game film, and I don't particularly like the sports analogy, but it works, you know, very well in this situation where it's like, okay, the leader, the coach has to be listening to those calls either proactively on their own or their SDR saying, hey, coach, this call didn't go so well, or this call, will you listen to this snippet of this call? And then you get into that coaching scenario. You know, were you interested in hearing more? Like, did you hear what that prospect just said? Did you hear that? Like they said something, there was a little intonation. What could you have done in that particular? Did you hear that? Now that you said it, I hear that intonation, or I hear that little subtle thing that they said there. What could you have done in that situation? Gosh, maybe I could have asked another question. Mr. Ms. SDR, what would that question have sounded like? What could you have done? You know, in this like Socratic coaching method, Eric, to like get the SDR to listen to their own stuff and go, ah, great. And then you go, okay, SDR, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is by the time we meet next week for our coaching session, I want you to send me three calls where you've peeled the layers of the onion back, like two or three levels, you know, levels more. I'm a huge fan of the Sandler pain funnel. Mm-hmm. Anybody can Google it, the Sandler pain funnel. And it helps the salesperson, whether that's SDR, AM, or AE, go from like surface level pains to business pains to personal pains. Okay. Right. Most SDRs, they just get the surface level pain. Boy, my salespeople just don't hit quota enough.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And then they move on to the next question. What CRM platform are you using? And it's like, okay, great. Interrogation style qualification. But instead, teaching those SDRs to, with a construct, to be curious and go, okay, well, what's the impact of that to the business?
Yes.
But who cares about that? You're talking to this person, does it mean anything to them? And I have a brief story for you. Prior to COVID, one of my enterprise salespeople flew me out to Minnesota in January. Icy, cold, okay? Beautiful country, lakes, fantastic, super cold. Drags me out there for this meeting with a customer. And we sit in front of this customer and my salesperson is not really doing the Sandler pain funnel very well. And so I started to do the Sandler pain funnel. And what I learned by going through surface level, business level, and then personal pain, Eric, was that neither of these two people, both had VPs, by the way, VP titles, neither of them had any sort of consequences if this problem didn't get solved. They didn't miss a bonus. They weren't at risk of getting fired. By the way, they weren't at risk of getting fired because they had continued to fail for years. And it was the same again and again and again. And we walk down to the parking lot. Again, it's like slick and it's icy. And I turn to my sales rep. I'm like, Ben, that deal is never closing because there's no personal pain that these people feel. You're wasting your time and you wasted my time flying me out here to, you know, Arizona. And he never forgot that. And it improved. His qualification improved once he could see this is a bad deal to be going. It's not qualified. There's no personal pain. So anyway.
Yeah, I think that
coaching.
that understanding of the funnel, you know, kind of like getting to even awakening within the prospect, the recognition of why this is worth having a next conversation is so important for SDRs because so many of them try to treat it very robotically, very like,
that's right.
You know, to your point earlier of activity levels where, hey, if I'm just checking boxes all day long, you know, if I'm just kind of using the script that was handed to me and I never get out of my little routine and I'm just this side of robotic.
Yeah.
By the way, that's one of the biggest criticisms that I could level at the SDR profession, right? So-and-so sounded robotic.
Sure. Yeah, no doubt.
But if you can't get out of that loop, then yeah, I agree with you. I have concerns about the future of SDRs too. And I say that mainly from a person that's existed on the buy side for a far longer time than on the sell side. Mm-hmm. And seeing all the tactics and techniques and frankly, deluge and volume of being approached a million different ways, most of them not that insightful and not frankly that meaningful or relevant to me, which is the orientation of most prospects.
Yeah, 100%. One of my favorite books, Eric, is the Challenger Sale.
I love it.
Yeah, and I feel like it should be, that sounds so weak. I recommend every SDR on the planet reads the Challenger Sale because there's the hard worker, there's the relationship person, and there's the challenger. And the challengers are the ones that are going to be more successful because they get their customer to think differently about the way that they're doing things right now. And if SDRs could be taught and recognize that they're going to take people from closed to open by doing something, teaching them and being insightful, they would then stop pitching, you know, features and shit. And here's the stuff that it's made by AI. It's powered by AI. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. In fact, powered by AI is so overused that you should just stop saying it because everyone expects it to be powered by AI. It's like, all right, I don't care how the hot dog is made. How are you going to, you know, change my person? Teach me something different than I didn't already know. I mean, look, you're a CMO. If an SDR came to you and said, I could guarantee you perfect attribution on every single dollar you spend. And that's the whole email. You might be really interested because you know as a marketer that getting perfect attribution on every dollar you spend is damn near impossible.
It is impossible. And I would be highly suspicious of that claim right off the bat.
You would be. And then it's followed up by a Coca-Cola testimony or something like a quote or something like that from the CMO at Coke or something like that.
It's funny you mentioned the Challenger sale because I recommend to every marketer, especially up and coming or you know, folks that are junior, because I've been at this a little while. The Challenger Customer is one of my favorite books, which kind of builds on the ideas of the Challenger Sale and actually takes it over to the buy side for helping form clarity of thought around what buyers actually have to go through and what even, you know, kind of like matters to them. If you're not thinking about that half of the equation, then you're probably, again, doing a very superficial effort as far as sales development would be concerned and go.
You're 100% right. Well, remember, I don't know about you, Eric, but I didn't go to school and be taught how to buy software.
No one was. No one did. Unless you work in a procurement department of a huge enterprise organization, there is no buying classes. There's no formal like education along those lines. It's all ad hoc. And frankly, it's unmonitored ad hoc, which means that in most organizations, when they buy, to your example of, you know, traveling to Minnesota for two VPs that they probably started that sales process largely because there was interest. This is an area of concern, but it's not a pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's right.
Buyers are actually generally pretty curious, I found, especially super successful, ambitious people that almost always by default want to see around corners, want to do a good job, want to earn their pay or advance to the next rung, whatever the case may be. And so it's very rare that you would have a director, VP, or a C-level that if I were to say this first half of the statement or a sentence and then watch it get finished by someone like you, I would say, hey, Kevin, or hey, KG, if I told you what kind of like the three most relevant VPs of sales are doing in your industry, would you want to know that information?
Right. Yeah. 100%.
All the time.
Yeah.
Every
100%.
Time.
It's why listicles are like so popular for SEO on Google. Cause it's like, everyone wants top five books and top five things that your, you know, your peers are doing that you're not, you know, like that. Absolutely.
Everyone wants above the hedgerows to see what's going on. The reason I use that example is because my hunch, and I'd love for you to confirm this or validate it, is that most SDRs usually don't take advantage of their biggest unfair advantage in their job. So I oftentimes say that SDR work is impossible because you're calling into jobs you've never done, right? Like the chances are really good that your average SDR has never done the job of a CISO, especially a mid-sized company, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Now that said, SDRs done well will be talking to the same title day in, day out, every single week, every single month, every single year. And therefore, because this is the direct response business and why I'm such a fan of the phone,
yeah,
you get to learn, even if you've never done the job of the CISO, the chances are really good. You get to learn about what CISOs care about or what they do or why they do it. Am I wrong in this?
No, you're not. You're not wrong. And let me just summarize back at you. You're basically saying like the unfair advantage should be the advantage or the inexperience should be the advantage because you're like, exactly. I don't know diddly about what it means to be a CMO. I've never done the job before, but you know what? I've actually talked to 50 in the last quarter and you know what they're telling me? And that's why, you know, let's just like, you know, my raised fist in the air. If you teach your SDRs, what keeps you up at night? You need to be removed from your job.
Like you
if
do. You're an SDR, I hate that.
That's right. In fact, you should be teaching. You should be telling these CMOs. We have spoken to 60 CMOs of companies of your size. And here's the three most common things that they tell us they're facing, you know, right now that keep them up at night.
Right.
How does that resonate, you know, with you? Or we've learned this thing after talking to X amount of, you know, CMOs. Those stories are super, you know, super valuable. And SDRs don't have a lot of those, which I know, you know, when the Bridge Group puts together their playbooks, they spend a lot of time training the SDRs on the stories, stories so that they can speak to the persona or speak to a customer story, because those become far more relatable than just like, hey, you know, would you like to be part of an interrogation where I ask you 1,000 questions? No, I'd like, you know, I got to be more insightful. I learned this lesson the hard way. You know, this is another mistake, by the way. At ZipRecruiter, with our enterprise sales motion, we learned that our VPs of HR, VPs of talent acquisition, CHROs, they were not going to sit through the Spanish acquisition and be subjected to, you know, a bunch of different questions. And instead, what we did, which I thought was, you know, amazing, and I don't know whose idea it was, but it was all of our idea put together. The demo deck weaved in the discovery questions. So it was ask a few questions, give some insights and show some things, ask additional questions. And it created a really good conversation where the prospect didn't feel like, okay, next question, next interrogation question. Okay. Like that's, you know, in terms of like, here's this step and then here's this step.
Yeah.
We were going to give them more information. Now, SDRs, by the way, should not be doing full qualification.
No,
there should be just a couple of criteria, like, you know, adjacent to the right title. There's the, you know, a real pain that, you know, that's here. And maybe they're using this particular technology or something like that. Like if you're qualifying, if SDRs are if your SDRs are qualifying for like BANT, you're doing it wrong. Because
you are doing it wrong.
3% of buyers are like BANT qualified when you call them, or less. So, I agree with you.
What I think is also missing in a lot of cases is that kind of like, here's what we're hearing. Is that the same for you? That is actually the perfect province for an SDR talk track / question track for any target persona / prospect / title cluster that you would be going after and targeting, largely because the very virtue of asking that question and checking facts around lookalike companies, lookalike personas to them, makes the questions relevant.
Yes, and here's your coaching moment. The scripting, this is where this can get dangerous. And you can script out some of this. Some of it just needs to be coached. In your playbook or your script, whatever you call it, I love scripts. We're seeing this across, CMOs in 2022, 2023. Do you see the same thing? Are you experiencing the same thing? Yes. Oh, tell me more.
Yeah.
And it's like just that little piece of coaching right then and there, because what I see, what I observe is these SDRs are like, great, check. I got a yes. Go to the next, it's like choose your own adventure. Go to the next story. Okay, now there's the next question. Now I'm filling all my fields in HubSpot or Salesforce. I'm like, great, I'm doing my job. No.
Right.
Can you be truly curious about that person? When you get the yes, great. Oh, tell me more about that. And allow them to expand on that, because you're going to be able to leverage that further down in your script into a real conversation about what the hell's going on at their business to figure out if they're qualified or not.
I love that. I love that coaching tip. I couldn't agree more. And I think that, we label it internally here. We call it forcing the binary, because a lot of people tend to be afraid of binary questions. They get a yes or no. Because they think that it shuts the conversation down. And I would argue the exact opposite, because the most natural questions are the genuine, curious, human level follow-up, right? So here's what we're seeing CMOs doing in 2023 in response to what we could call a tech recession. Bip, bip, bip. Happening at your organization, right? Similarly, if no, oh, why not? Right? Like right. The most simple kind of unassuming question that then just kind of, again, magic for SDRs listening to this podcast. Like when you can get to that scenario, the way you just reacted on this call to my, no, oh, why not? Was now I'm passing the mic to you. This ceased to become a cold call. It's now a sharing call. I'm going to learn everything about like why you reacted that way that you did. And all of a sudden, we just did that closed stance, that guarded, that why is this phone call was such a nuisance and interrupted my day. All of a sudden is going to be pulled down and go, on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not, by the way, we're still talking about small percentages here. Okay. And based on the things that we're talking about, it doesn't make, every single call now turns into this beautiful, dance.
You still may get shut down.
Yeah. You still could get your ass handed to you. And you, it still may not, turn into what you want it to, to turn into, but you're going to improve your probabilities of success when you can do, some of these things. Anybody who says cold calling doesn't work is trying to sell you something that typically is a marketing automation type of tool or, some sort of training that, that's going to do this, that, or the other there. It does work. It just works. It's in small percentages, and we're going to improve our probabilities of increasing those percentages by implementing some of these, some of these best practices. But it's not like, great, you're going to have 100% connect rate and you're going to have 100% qualification rate. In fact, I'll go the opposite. I tell my salespeople and my SDRs, your job is to DQ. Your job is to DQ. And I want to take, I want the prospect to show us that they deserve to be in our pipeline. And I'm not saying be a jerk. I'm saying let's be very cognizant of our time, because look, you're a CMO and your counterpart, CRO, CSO or whatever, they hate nothing more than massive amounts of unqualified pipeline.
Right.
So why don't we create a cylinder and not, and more of a cylinder than like this big wide funnel. Let's think about DQing these prospects for their benefit. Like, that's super customer centric.
Well, you know, the other thing about, I love that advice too. Your job is to DQ, because what that also packs into it as a forcing function is this idea that, to disqualify somebody would mean that they would have to essentially be relevant to us. Ergo, I'm calling with value. I know the problems that we solve. Ultimately, like, we're in a better place mentally and standing on equal footing, right? Like, with the prospect, and that becomes the reason for, human psychology says FOMO works for very specific reasons. You know, like, if you show me you have no value, why should I care? But if you all of a sudden assume you have a ton of value and I have to be qualified in,
subconsciously,
I'm going to qualify myself.
Yeah, that's right. Some people call that pattern interrupts. Yes. There's a whole, I totally agree. Sandler says things like, never get in between the customer and where you want them to go. So in other words, instead of trying to pull them towards closed one or qualification or qualified, you actually try and like pull them away from qualified or away from, so that they save you and pull themselves back into qualified or and again it's a mental perspective. It also lowers the guard
of the prospect
because what self-respecting salesperson or SDR isn't trying to convince you to do something. And when you don't do that, that's the pattern interrupt, Eric.
Yeah.
When you don't do that, when you don't do what the customer, the prospect is expecting, it lowers their guard. And now they're like, oh, this isn't just the run of the mill SDR that's just trying to convince me to get on a demo call for a $50 Amazon gift card. Like, that's it's different. So anyway, we can go on differentiate and on about that. Yeah, completely.
Well, KG, I mean, this has been like a tour de force of mistakes and what to do better, learnings, insights. I think I found myself saying, I agree 100%, like probably a dozen times with everything you were saying. For others, especially those in our audience who may want to benefit from some of your consulting services.
Sure.
Where should they go?
Well, I'm super, thank you for asking. And it was awesome being on the show. You can find me on LinkedIn very, very actively. It's just Kevin Gaither. So, go to LinkedIn, search for Kevin Gaither. You'll find me, follow my stuff there. And there's a whole bunch of, resources on my LinkedIn profile. You can also go to insidesalesexpert.com and you'll find dozens of free guides, leadership guides that are available to download. And of course, if you so choose, there are consulting and advisory services, leadership advisory services that I provide there as well. But come for the free stuff.
I love
it. InsideSalesExpert.com. Thanks for having me.
You bet. This was great. Thanks for coming on.
You got it. Anytime.